Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength Conditioning Podcast. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
Happy Wednesday and... No, Thursday today. So you guys are actually hearing it on the right day. Hope everyone is doing well as always. And I appreciate those who reached out about our last podcast with the guest speaker. So good feedback from that. So hopefully that's something that we'll have more in the future. So, Adam, what's new with you?
Not much. Staying busy. All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah. Have you seen any uptick in clients or anything right now?
Not a ton at the moment. I'm working on getting a little bit more stuff out there to hopefully get a few more people in. But as of right now, I'm sitting at about what I was at the beginning of the year.
Sure. Yeah, about this time last year, I noticed, probably about the first 6 weeks of the new year last year, I noticed all of a sudden it was like slower, slower, and then all of a sudden it was like the second week of February, skyrocketed, and I was waiting this year, and again, consistent, not slow by any means, and then it's like second week of February. Now, just phone calls are coming in, whether it's skiing when people can go, so it's just funny how certain times of the year you always see certain trends, so...
More people... People still recovering from the holidays for January.
Now I figure it's kind of the holiday hangover is past, and so it's keeping up with that. So if anyone listening has reached out to me through email or has called and I haven't gotten back to you guys, I apologize. I haven't gotten back to you yet. I'm making my way through everything. So, all right. So, Adam, what are we talking about today?
So we are talking about squatting and the hips. Preface from this for this was us specifically having some things wanting to talk about hip snapping syndrome, because a lot of people have that, and that kind of is transforming into kind of overall hip, I don't know if you want to call it dysfunction. I mean, it's hip dysfunction, hip pain, hip, you know, things related to the hip joint, more so related to squatting. We've talked a lot of stuff. We've talked a lot about hinging. We talk about that a lot. So we've talked a lot about knees with squatting, but not a ton about the hips. So that's what we're kind of getting into today.
Yeah, and when we talk about squatting, again, it there's a skill to the movement, but it's a fundamental movement pattern that we should be able to do. And if someone has something wrong with the squat's probably not the problem. It's that something else has really taken over, and then it's caused a dysfunction of the squat. So as we've talked about before, the squat's very safe for us. But the hip is a very common place. So we've talked about the knee in the past, where it can be a common place where people can get a lot of pain. But the hip can be too. And really a common one that people will say is, I get snapping or pinching or clicking. And it can be snapping hip syndrome. So we just wanted to take today, kind of go over it, our thoughts on it, and what you can do about it to hopefully prevent it from getting worse, or to identify factors that may fix it. And that's really the big thing. Now, there are three types of snapping hip syndrome, and this is going to be different compared to femoral acetabular impingement, where we're talking about a bony abnormality. That can be more intra-articular, and that's going to be either because someone has a structural deformity of the actual socket, or there could be bony overgrowth on the head of the femoral neck. So, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to potentially stay away from those.
Yeah.
Because those are going to be more... Some of them can lead to surgery. So
right,
we're trying to stay, we're staying extra articular now, or outside of the joint. That's really, really going to be our focus for today. But there are three types that we can have. We can have external, which is going to be more towards the outside, kind of IT band, TFL, snapping over the greater trochanter. We can also see what is defined as internal snapping hip, which would be the iliopsoas tendon. I'd say that's the more common one that I typically see in the act of squatting. Mm-hmm. And then they can have another one called intra-articular, which typically you're going to see some type of a torn labrum, the joint capsule, there's something wrong with it, which may lead to femoral acetabular impingement. So again, we're going to be talking more about the first two that we go over today. In your time working with individuals, would you say you've seen more of the external, close to the greater trochanter, or more of what they would classify as internal, the iliopsoas?
Probably a little bit more internal. I feel like I have, in my career, run into it a lot more on hip flexion as it relates to abdominal exercises more so than squatting. Or that's just when most people, I feel like, notice it. We're doing dead bugs. We're doing leg lifts. Let me think. What else? Mountain climbers, stuff like that.
So why do you think that is? Because you're pointing out non-weight-bearing positions.
Yeah, I think it's partially because a lot of people that I've worked with are very stuck in a lower back extended position. I'm blanking on the term.
Lordotic.
Lordotic, thank you. Yes, lordotic posture. And so they just, they only have the ability to keep the pelvis in a certain position through a certain range of movement. A lot of people, if you can get them to do that little bit of a pelvic tilt in those positions where it's warranted to do a little bit of one, not necessarily a super weight bearing one where you'd want to do it, but they can usually go for a certain portion of the time, and then you can almost see like, yep, that's where it was right there. They can do it for 3/4 of the movement, like on a dead bug, but at a certain point, it just, they can't keep it anymore, and it snaps.
And that's, you know, leg raises, and I know many people have a lot of different names for them, but leg raises, I just don't think are a great exercise. You know, maybe if someone's doing like a reverse crunch or something like that with the knees slightly bent.
Yeah.
But oftentimes when you think about what the core actually does, or not the core, but the hip flexor, it's either going to flex the hip or it's going to flex the trunk. So if we're laying on our back to do a leg raise, it has to move the legs, stabilize the back. Well, then it shortens down on both sides. So what ends up happening,
Kristen,
what ends up happening is we end up getting basically a reversal of the curvature at the spine. We get a shortening of the hip flexor, and then that pulls us into a further anterior pelvic tilt. Now, that's not to say that leg raises are necessarily bad for us, but what we're trying to focus on is maintaining a neutral position. So that just goes back to your point of kind of that non-weight-bearing position. We actually have to think about what the hip flexor is doing. And I'd probably say that the hip flexor version could be probably more common. There are instances where I typically will see kind of that snapping hip syndrome more laterally from the TFL / IT band. And I've seen it in younger patients that have a lot of hip mobility. So they kind of just scour the hip all the way around and they get the tightening of the tissue. And then it just snaps underneath the IT band. Or we've seen the older adult that has the loss of hip mobility. And again, doesn't necessarily have to be old. I'm just saying older than the younger patient with too much mobility. So when someone becomes older and we lose that mobility, then all of a sudden the tissue tightens down as well. And then we end up seeing kind of that loss of range of motion and we get the snapping. So, and I'd find that is more in the weight bearing position. So I'd certainly say I've seen a mix of them both. Now, as far as the hip flexor stuff that we talked about, Adam, and especially with those activities that you described, the non-weight bearing, you know, what's the first thing that you'll do when someone starts to lose kind of that position and you can the clunks are pretty big or the snaps, they're audible, you can hear them, even if you're not close to the person. What's kind of your first step in the process to fix something like that?
So my very first step, you said non-weight bearing, right?
Yeah, like the leg raises or the dead bugs or...
In a non-weight bearing position, my first check is that pelvic tilt. Usually I'm just saying like, you know, really try to press your lower back into the ground or something like that. Or, you know, if in the gym we've used like bands, like put a band on the lower back, don't let me take the band, that kind of thing. After that, if that seems to be like it's in a decent position and, or you know, it's the best position they can seem to get into.
Yeah.
The next thing I'm checking, like on a dead bug or a leg raise or something like that, is the orientation of the leg, the foot. Are their toes turned out so they're stuck more in an external rotation or, you know, something along those lines? Or if they're doing a dead bug, when they straighten the leg out, does the leg then also rotate outwards or inwards or any sort of weird thing? Those are the two biggest things I'm checking first. The orientation of where the knee and the leg are going, I definitely focus on a little bit more when it comes to things like mountain climbers and stuff like that, because I feel like there's a bigger difference in, you know, make sure the knee's coming straight ahead rather than going out at an angle or, you know, across the body or...
Well, sure, and we'll typically see people do that as well as a way to kind of get around a hip dysfunction. And then that compensation pattern is what then leads to the snapping hip, because the hip flexor, the iliopsoas, is actually an external rotator, a lateral rotator. So when that occurs, you get shortening at the hip flexor, and you got to think a muscle is going to shorten from both ends. So not only is it shortened at the hip, it shortens at the spine where it attaches. We also have to think we have the TFL, which is a secondary hip flexor. So that's turning on, but it's an internal rotator. So now it's eccentrically loaded to offset the lateral rotation that we're trying to force ourselves into. So it's just one of those scenarios where the compensation pattern that we're trying to give ourselves more range of motion eventually will catch up with us and cause these issues. I mean, how many people have you seen over the years have IT band or lateral leg pain? They roll it, they stretch it, and it only brings them, you know, 50% of the way. And they're like, yeah, but I continue to have this, you know, months later, I still get the same thing back. And then it's like, well, have you tried doing the TFL? Well, what's that? It's just a muscle that's not talked about enough.
Right.
And I just typically find anything IT band related, instantly check the TFL, instantly check the glutes. I mean, there's just...
Well, see, that's the, like, I've kind of gotten away from the, you know, not rolling the IT band because it's non-contractile tissue thing. I mean, like, when I was doing classes and stuff, I wouldn't necessarily, like... It's not a waste of time, but there are other things that are more important, so I wouldn't do that much because it takes up time you could be using for other things. But when people are saying they have like that pain on the side of their legs, that TFL area is one of the first places I'm having them roll, because realistically, the TFL creates the problem for the IT band, because the IT band itself is, I mean, when I say non-contractile tissue, for those of you at home, like it's
doesn't shorten. It's like there's no active contraction, right, of myosin or actin.
Exactly. It's the same as it's essentially the same as your Achilles tendon or any of the other tendons in your body. They don't actually move. The muscles change their position and their length.
Mm-hmm.
So the TFL is really the more of the issue with the IT band than the IT band itself.
Yeah, it's the IT band is really a way for the glutes to affect the distal lower extremity by means of the knee. So, and that's really all that it is. Now, I'm not against, and we'll go off track a little bit, only because we talked about foam rolling and the IT band. I've also had people say to me, you know, don't foam roll the IT band, and we're not going to damage it. We have to recognize that. And if someone needs to attack the lateral quad,
mm-hmm,
we can only do that by going through the IT band. So I've heard arguments both ways, but I've rolled my IT band every which way that you can do it, and I've never had a detrimental effect from it. Mm. Have I had a positive effect from IT band only rolling? I can't promise you that. But rolling the lateral legs, I know, helps out with discomfort and helps with lateral knee pain and hip pain. So for everyone who's ever said, you know, don't roll the IT band, it's like, shh, go ahead and show me. Do we need to do it? Probably not. Is it going to harm me if I do? No. Does it hurt? Hell yeah. Like, the IT band's probably the one place that you can consistently roll and it's never going to feel pain-free.
Yeah. IT band and lats. I've never. That sucks. Yeah.
I mean, that just goes from this sucks to this sucks less.
Yeah, seriously. I mean,
the second you pin the tissue down to the lateral border of the scap and just mash it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get that sensation down your arm. Mm-hmm. It's almost like someone's stabbing you into the chest wall. And it's like you don't even have to move very far. So, all right. We talked about kind of your first step in correcting a non-weight-bearing hip. You know, we'll call it hip impingement, hip snapping syndrome. What do you typically do for a weight-bearing position? So let's say someone comes in, they're squatting, it's pinching right in the front.
So I'm usually trying to create space in that joint somehow. Usually the easiest way to do that, or the first way to do that, is just by loosening up the area. It's foam rolling, it's stretching, it's getting, making sure there's as much movement in that hip joint as possible.
So let's say you ask someone to loosen it up. Mm-hmm. They've been working on it for a couple weeks, and you would have anticipated it would have made it better, and chances are it's going to be. But they say, I'm doing everything you're telling me. I'm still getting that pinch. What do you want to start to work on next?
So either some strength in that hip flex position with a less load-bearing exercise. In certain scenarios, I might use like a band or something like that to create a little bit of hip distraction. That's usually not where I'm going first. I'm usually going the, you know, stretch, roll, strengthen first. And then if after a little while it's not working, maybe something like that to create a little bit of hip distraction, and then go through a range of motion with that. For those of you that don't know what I mean, like band up in the hip joint, it basically creates tension to give more space, and then you go through, like, pretend like you're doing a mountain climber with a band around your hip. It's basically what it is.
Great exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, helped me a lot when I had some closing angle pinch issues. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say 10 years ago, I mean, my hips were so tight that it would just kill my back anytime mm-hmm. I would back squat. And I finally realized, oh, crap, my internal rotation is shit. And it killed my back. And I loosened up my hips. Back pain has gone away. And, I get bouts of it here and there. But that's usually because I've done too much. But that's how I know. If I lose hip mobility, my back is going to kill me.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly doing pigeon. I'm constantly rolling my glutes. I'm constantly seated figure four.
Yeah.
Even if people don't think I'm doing anything, especially on intake, you know, I'm giving myself a little bit of a seated figure four and they don't even realize it. For me, I want to try to figure out if someone comes in, when I do the squat, you know, I get this sensation in the front. Well, I want to diagnose it at that point because I want to try to determine, is it a stability issue? Is it a potentially a stiff ankle issue, or it could even be just that it's not enough range of motion issue. So I typically have someone, you know, use TRX straps and squat, and all of a sudden if they drop all the way down into a full squat, no pinch, all right, it's a stability issue. We got to try to figure out where that lack of control is coming from. So that's usually step one in the process. Then I'll usually give the cue to widen your stance and externally rotate. So if they're able to sit down further with no pinch, okay, we've given you a little bit more joint freedom. And then if that still doesn't fix it, then I have them squat with their heels up on a bumper plate or something, 2x4. If that fixes it, then it's an ankle problem. So that's kind of my steps that I work through the process. Of course, the easiest one of all those is going to be the ankles. It's like, oh, great, we just elevate you up. Half an inch off the ground goes away. Loosen up those calves, self-moves for the ankles. You'll be fine. The issue we start to see is when we start to get in kind of the stability region, because that really just comes down to more time more than anything. And for those of you, we've talked about strength a ton. We've talked about stability. We have to remember that they're two different things. You can have strong people who are not in control, and then we have people who are in control that are not strong. Mm-hmm. So the problem is it's more neuromuscular driven. And we have to teach the nervous system that this has to be the new norm. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be that break-in period of, hey, this is what I'm used to, but I need to do this now. And it's a game of tug of war for the first couple weeks. So it's a lot of concentration. And then once we get into, is it a hip space problem? Then it comes down to, okay, is it potentially the joint is too tight? Are the muscles around the area too tight? Do they have a hip flexor tendinosis, which is another common thing that I see with a lot of people, especially if there's a compensation or an injury on that side. And those are the people that will probably say, my hip flexor bothers me when I walk uphill. And that's usually because you have to actively pull your leg through hip flexion now. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, all right, well, now if it's a tendinopathy, that just took on a whole new meaning, because now we have to break that tissue down. We have to let the body reheal itself. You know, we are looking at 6 to 12 to even 14 weeks of healing. So time. That's why I like it when it's an ankle problem, because it's like, all right, you do this for 2 weeks, you're probably going to be good to go.
Yeah.
Now, there are instances where you can have all three. You can have an ankle problem that led to a lack of stability and control, and you know, then it's basically a reconstruction project, because you got to work on all of them at that point. So,
can I ask you a question that's kind of off topic, yep. But how do you feel about, and I'm asking this more so because I feel like for some reason I'm seeing it more recently, people being like, don't forget to train your hip flexors, like the, you know, people doing the marches with kettlebells around the foot and stuff like that. I don't know.
So
it's not something that I focus that often on, because so many of us are so constantly in some amount of hip flexion, but I don't. Sure.
So I guess I would have to test the hip flexor individually. Mm-hmm. So, and not that you can ever isolate a muscle, but there are some positions that we can put it into. So I would check it there. I would probably check hip flexion above 90 degrees, mm-hmm. and see if there's any inefficiencies there. But it's, I find it rare for the hip flexors to be weak. Could they lack efficiency?
Yeah.
Sure, I could see that. Would I want them to do resisted hip flexion at 85% of their one rep max? Probably not. But I'd be fine, like with the little ankle bands for side steps.
Yeah.
So I've seen those done before where they kind of pull active hip flexion. And if it's light, I'm okay with that, because it could be giving some feedback or increased neuromuscular efficiency or whatever you want to call it. But I just find that it's rare that we have a true weakness.
Yeah.
I just think that it's the muscle gets so tight that eventually it reaches its tolerance threshold. And then it becomes weak because it can't do anything else. So, am I okay with strengthening it? Sure. But you have to make sure you're strengthening it without compensation.
Right. I was going to say, and that's a hip flexion is a difficult thing to train without compensating.
Well, that's, you got to think.
If you're not somebody that knows.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about in the non-weight-bearing positions. When you flex your hip, you're also going to get stabilization of the spine. If you can't control that, it creates flexion of the spine. So that creates a closing angle. And that is essentially what happens to a lot of us. And that is why I feel a lot of people get low back pain when squatting. Because essentially you have to use trunk flexion. The issue being not enough people are sitting their hips back with a hinge. And then they're getting shortening from both ends. It creates an anterior slide of the lower lumbar segments. And then it just, anterior pelvic tilt just folds up right on itself. So I think a lot of people can really reduce that closing angle pinch or the low back pain by having better control of kind of, I don't want to say lower abdominals, but the entire abdominal, but focusing on kind of that low back, lumbosacral, lumbopelvic region, where we just tend not to think about it, or someone's been coached the wrong way so that they're okay with that little bit of a curve and they end up doing that rib flare, and which it's the same exact thing. Right. Then we have lower thoracic extension, which then creates lumbar flexion. So again, we can have 15 people walk through this door right now with snapping hip syndrome, and they're all gonna have different reasons as to why it's happening. So even though this is just a name that we give it, we still have to go through the process of trying to figure it out. Our goal for the listener is to give them the most salient talking points today so that they can turn around and treat their conditions today. Now, when someone comes in and says they have lateral, or we won't even say lateral hip pain, But most people, when they say, oh, my hip is bothering me, they point to the outside of their leg.
Yeah.
Now, what we know about anatomy is that actually the hip.
Not really.
Not really. So if someone comes in and says, my hip is bothering me, and they point to the outside of their leg, that is the greater trochanter. That is the top portion of the femur bone, the thigh bone. If someone has a true hip problem, referring to where the connection point of the leg and the socket in the pelvis, they would have groin pain. So if you actually looked at the anatomy, skeletal anatomy, the hip socket is where your groin is, and that's the connection point. So when people come in, they point to that outside area. Oh, I have hip problems. No, you don't.
You have glute problems.
Yeah, exactly. So can you expand upon that where you just said you have glute problems?
Tightness in one or multiple of the glute muscles that run through there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then typically if they have tightness there,
yeah.
What's another symptom that they will report?
Usually lower back pain.
Exactly. So, and then they'll start to report too, and especially younger females, and I referred to this earlier, they'll say something snaps here. It feels like something's popping out.
Yeah.
Like something's dislocating. No. Not even close. Like don't even worry about that. But now we're pulling tension. You either have someone who's too mobile,
mm-hmm.
so you get that bone sliding underneath the connective tissue, or the other person with not enough range of motion pulls tension, and then it's so tight it has no choice but to snap around the bone. So where's the first place that you go with this person that points to the outside and, you know, God, my hip is bothering me?
Pretty much right there. For me, the lacrosse ball into the glute somewhere.
Yeah.
And I say somewhere because I'm basically telling the person, like, find the spot that's the most uncomfortable, and that's the spot to focus in on.
Yeah. I've just typically found that most people have gluteal tendinopathy and they don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. So the problem's been there for a very long time, which could have started from tight hip flexors, which then changed their pelvic tilt, which caused back pain, which led to the glutes. Now, are you going to have pain in all of those areas? Probably not, because your body only focuses on the one that it has to prioritize. However, you clean one up, your body's then going to tell you where to go next.
Yeah.
Because someone loosened their hips. Oh, I feel this in my back more. Well, you're loosening up your hips, and now your back doesn't have to move as much. So now we got to stabilize it. Well, now we stabilize the back. Well, now I feel like the front of my hip is bothering me. Well, now the hip flexor doesn't have to do too much. So now we're unwinding you. We're working right backwards, which is kind of the cool part.
I think I've always thought that's interesting to see that process. When you have somebody that like has had back pain for really, there are several clients I can think of that it really is, it's like a, I think about it kind of like a Rubik's Cube, but it's almost in my head. It formulates almost like if you take like a balloon and you squeeze it between your fingers and you push one area so the other area goes out, but then when you push that one in, another area goes out. It's a similar like, okay, we fixed that. So that was one compensation pattern, but that compensation pattern was built by this. Okay, this hurts. Okay, well, that's normal. It's just interesting. It's kind of like when you have, and I don't know if this is the reason, but I've noticed it more and more. Have you ever noticed that like I always think about it like the NFL. The player that all of a sudden goes from being injury prone to non-injury prone anymore, like they have hamstring, and then they pulled their quad, and now they're having back spasms, and so the first 2 or 3 years of their, I mean, the only people that make it are the ones that are really good till like their fourth year where they're not injury prone anymore. But that particular player who like, you know, is super explosive, but then pulls their hamstring, and they come back from the hamstring, but now the other hamstring pulls, and they come back from that, now they've got a quad problem, and then now they're having back spasms, and then like by their third year, it's all of a sudden like, what the hell was the difference? They didn't really do anything that we know of, but all of a sudden now they don't get hurt. I don't have research to back that up, but just common sense wise, I would think that it's probably a bit of, we've talked about how athletes are the best compensators. One compensation gets blown up essentially, so then another one gets blown up, then another one gets blown up, and then eventually.
And I would assume there's appropriate rehab going on,
right? Training. Of course, yeah.
And with that, you know, they're basically unwinding all the crap that was done beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, and that's nothing, you know, I'm not pointing out, like, probably their college strength and conditioning program.
Oh, no.
But, and it's gotten much better, but let's look at football probably in the 80s, 90s, and even early 2000s. You know, you see all these videos of guys going in the weight room just, you know, clean and jerk, or cleans with 500 pounds, squats with 800 pounds for reps. So it was, how much weight can I do? I just need to muscle through it. You know, probably the whole concept of pliability was never thrown around in a college weight room. I'm sure it's better now. You know, sports directors of sports performance really have to focus on all that, because they want their athletes to stay on the field. But I think once you get to the pro level, then it's like, hey, you guys can't just muscle your way through everything. Right. You know, so they really help you identify, okay, well, this is what we need to work on. These are your impairments. And then it's, we cleaned up this one. And it's like, well, sorry. You know, you tore one Achilles, you're probably going to tear the other because of compensations. It's just, it's the way that it is. And we have research from the functional movement guys that basically states that if you have it on, an injury on one side or an impairment, you are more likely to get it on the other side. So I'd say for a lot of these guys, that's really what they're up against. And the average person too. So we have to be mindful of that. If you get snapping hip syndrome on one side, well, think about the amount of time you've been cheating to get through that. Mm-hmm. If you clean up one side, it's probably going to start all over again on the other, which is also why I will tell people, make sure you're doing these exercises on both sides. If you don't think you need it, I would still do it. Even if it's 50% of the attention you're giving the affected side, because it, and it's generally right around the week 6 mark. And that's anecdotal. People usually start saying, my bad side is now feeling pretty good. My good side, I'm noticing the same thing starting. You didn't damage anything. Unless you fell down, had a traumatic event, mm-hmm. you did not damage anything. It's basically that leg has been compensating for so long, it doesn't need to compensate anymore. So just starting a little bit early with the rehab exercise, I think can be very, very beneficial. Now, one thing that we haven't touched upon yet, and we've talked about arthritis in general before, but with this snapping hip syndrome, do you think hip arthritis causes the snapping hip? Do you think the snapping hip causes the arthritis, or do you think the arthritis is just potentially a inconsequential finding that they may find on film?
So I would think that the only way that arthritis directly affects the hip snapping is if somebody developed arthritis and started a compensation pattern to get around pain. Like, I don't know if that... So, like... Let's say that, you know, doing straight on hip flexion, like in a neutral position, not externally or internally yep. rotated, started being painful because there's hip arthritis in there. And so they started turning their foot outwards more to compensate. That, I would imagine, will eventually lead to something like hip snapping. But I wouldn't imagine that arthritis itself, without any sort of compensation, leads to it, if that,
I agree,
like,
with
indirectly
that.
I don't know if that's
arthritis itself, again, is just, it's kind of a normal wear and tear event that happens over time. Some people more than others, some people sooner than others, but I think it, you hit the nail on the head that it's, if someone has arthritis that's actually causing discomfort mm-hmm. or a mobility problem for that matter, because I've never met anyone with significant hip arthritis that became more hypermobile, unless there was like a dislocation or pelvic fracture or something along those lines. But generally, they're all going to compensate. When we have hip arthritis, we as in society, we generally lose internal rotation. And that's a key aspect to movement that people don't recognize. So the body says, okay, I don't have internal rotation. I can offset that by now pushing my rotation more to the outside. Then if I need relative rotation, I know I can come back to neutral. But then it's like, all right, I'm missing that other 45 degrees that I need to go inwards. So then we run through the same process like we did before. If I'm constantly turning my foot out, we're now putting an eccentric load into my groin. And that's what I think causes a lot of the inside joint problems when we have snapping hip. We're going to see shortening of the actual hip flexor because now we're in lateral rotation. We're going to see that increased length of the TFL because that's an internal rotator. Then we're all going to see we're constantly cranking the glutes into external rotation, and repetitive stress tells us we're going to cause a tendinopathy at some point. So there may not be one event that we can say, oh, this slip and fall did X. Well, you've had hip pain for 6 months. You're repeatedly turning your leg out. You're basically just doing one giant glute contraction 16 hours a day. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen? You know, so it's really just a repetitive stress event. Now, if that were the case and there's known arthritis, would you go about prescribing things differently for them? Everything that we talked about today.
Probably not.
Why?
Because at the end of the day, increasing the space in the joint is going to be what helps with the arthritis pain. And the way that you increase the space in the joint is by loosening and strengthening the joint, the muscles around the joint.
Yep. That's exactly it. Because the arthritis, again, could be there, may or may not be a problem. And we're not going to change anything. Once the arthritis is there, we're not changing it.
Right.
So what's the point? And again, is it just decreased joint space? Is there loss of cartilage? So we have to know all the fine details of it. But really, it's a matter of what are the impairments? Okay, I don't have internal rotation. All right, can we somehow get that back? I can't lift my hip past 90 degrees. Okay, you should be able to go 115 to 125. Can we get that back? Mm-hmm. Can I go into full external rotation with a normal end feel? And what I mean by that is there's a firm end feel at the end, but it doesn't feel like bone on bone. Can I do weight-bearing hip flexion without pinching, pain, whatever that may be? So one by one, we just start to check those off the list. And it's generally easier to fix the non-weight-bearing impairments prior to the weight-bearing just because of compression. So I would treat it the same exact way. But have I had people with known hip arthritis that have lateral hip pain with associated low back pain with a closing angle pinch? Yes. Where did it all start? I don't know.
Right.
Do I care? No. Whereas you get the person that says, I fell down, hit my knee, fractured my kneecap, and then my hip started to bother me. Well, okay, when you fracture your kneecap, you're not allowed to bend your knee. If you don't bend your knee, you have to rely more on the hip. And then that probably started that compensation process. So I usually say it to people, you know, a lot of these events that we have, minus injuries, it's chicken or the egg. Chicken or the egg event, I don't care which one started. We just have to address all of it now. And then eventually you'll see, okay, they're both a little bit better. A little bit better, a little bit better. Oh, look, I don't have as much pain now. Okay, great. Keep going. Try to maximize whatever you can with it. So, now, are there typically things that people should avoid, that you recommend they avoid, other than just saying, oh, that causes pain, don't do it? Because that's more of a, if they went to see certain people in the medical field, they would just say, oh, that hurts, don't do it.
Right. So the big ones that I've always kind of been told and have kind of is, so stuff that involves a lot of force and there's pain. So if jumping causes severe pain, it doesn't get any better than something like that. But the one big one that I've always kind of is, if you have that closing angle pinch, that's where you want to be careful of. You want to stop short of that pinching sensation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've talked about it before, but a closing angle pinch is basically just when you get so as close to the end of, like if you're bending your arm at the elbow and you're bringing your hand towards your shoulder, if at a certain point as you're making that joint space less and less, or you're making that angle less and less, there's all of a sudden where it hurts and it feels like a pinch, that's a closing angle pinch. And that can happen in the hip, and that's not something you want to drive into, essentially.
Well, and again, if they did, I mean, the body's next process is going to be, oh, let's go back into the compensation I already know. And the goal is to eliminate as many of those compensations as possible. So do I think it's a frustrating diagnosis? Sure. We can call it functional diagnosis, even if we don't want to call it a more of a medical diagnosis. But I do feel it's something that either people end up compensating to get rid of the pain and then it causes another compensation, or they don't stick with the treatments or self-care long enough to have a full resolution of those symptoms. Or they just continue the bad habits that brought them there in the first place. So I just think fixing it really just takes a lot of dedication. We do know that acute injuries are easy. We have the laws of healing that we have to follow. The body has to go through the three stages of healing. Not a big deal. Just don't do anything to slow down the healing. When we don't have that initial event, then it's, okay, there's something habitual that's going on. If we don't change this habit, it's just going to come right back. And that's unfortunate, because most people don't realize that for habit control, the neurology of movement, it's about rehabituation. So you have to teach it something new, mm-hmm. continue to groove that pattern, and then even once you're good at it, you then have to continue to implement it and then integrate it into the things that you're doing. So then it eventually is, okay, laying on my back, I can keep my back stable, I can bring my knee to my chest. Okay, can I flip over into a prone position and kind of do a modified mountain climber statically? And then can I do it dynamically? And then can I do my loaded squat positions without weight? Can I do it, you know, against gravity? Can I do it with a TRX? Can I then groove it holding on to a kettlebell? Can I do a back squat? So that's a long process. Even though I just went through 9 different variations or progressions, it's a long time. Some of them are easier. Some of them are a lot harder. So it's really the important aspect is the consistency, the diligence, the recognizing that, hey, every day is not going to be a good day, and it's okay if you have one day where it doesn't feel as good, as long as it doesn't consistently feel that way or you're losing range of motion. So, but really, my treatments don't really change from body part to body part, not because I've become lazy. It's just because we've seen over and over again how well they work. Mm-hmm. Use something to loosen the area, foam roll, massage gun, lacrosse stick, whatever it may be. Massage stick, lacrosse stick, whatever. It's been a long day already.
That's all right.
And then once we go from there, I like to have people loosen things up. I know there's some controversy about stretching in general, but I like to loosen it up.
Is that like a thing now? I'm seeing more and people like, oh,
don't stretch.
Yeah.
It does nothing for you.
Just like the last week. Like, did something happen that I missed and now everybody's
there's a lot now with the neurology of it. So you should be eccentrically loading it if you want to lengthen it, because if you stretch, you're really decreasing the nervous system's sensation to stretch. Okay. You're not actually elongating anything.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I feel about it. I'm like, well,
just more semantics arguing crap.
And yeah, I don't get too caught into it.
No, I know. I just you brought that up, and I've seen more and more, so I didn't know if like.
Yeah, I'm still a fan of stretching. So
yeah,
yeah. So loosen it, lengthen it, and then load it.
Yeah.
And if we can remember those, as long as you realize that not everyone needs to do all three, and you're always going to be on one end of the spectrum. Hopefully in the middle, then generally the body will heal itself. That's the beautiful part. I mean, think of the number of injuries you've had. You treat it the same exact way we just described, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes they heal. And then if you get to a certain point where you get stuck, that's when you usually see me. I beat you up, and sometimes we get ahead of it. So that's the important part. But hopefully this gives a brief overview of snapping hip syndrome and kind of the two types that we see the most and the more common impairments that we see with that. You know, we've talked about specific hip stuff in the past, but this is a very common one that I'll see or that we'll see. So we just thought it was important to kind of point it out. You probably have some type of snapping hip and you guys don't even realize it at times, because I know I get it, but it just doesn't announce itself enough for me to care. Fortunately, I continue to do a lot of my stretches for my hips. So even if I have it, it's not going to be a big deal, and it doesn't need to be. Just because there's popping, snapping, cracking, whatever it may be, as long as there's no pain associated with it, generally it's nothing to worry about. Whereas if you hear a large pop and your leg gives out, you'll want to get that looked at. I'm not saying it's bad, but I can promise you it's not good. Yeah. So, all right, any other points for the group?
Nope. I think we good. We hit a lot of this stuff, so yeah.
All right, perfect. You guys know the drill. All the information is going to be at the bottom. Reach out if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or if there's any way that we can help you. We're always here for you. Because again, our quest is to make sure you live a long and healthy life. So until next week, take care.
Later, guys.